Hey, Fresh Capital listeners. In this episode, we are talking about Razer, the world's leading lifestyle brand for gamers. In past episodes, Albert and I have tackled some of the biggest gaming trends, but we haven't yet dived into the hardware companies that are enabling the growing interest in games. Razer has designed and built the world's largest gamer-focused ecosystem of hardware, software, and services. Even outside the gaming world, Razer's leading computer mouse and keyboard technology can be found in many offices and homes in the world. As always, keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. My name is Dan. Joining me for the last time in his apartment, Albert. How are you doing?
Dan, I'm going good. I'm going good. Yes, I think this is going to be the last Fresh Capital in my apartment. I think the next time I record will either be potentially in my apartment or in my office because I won't have internet yet.
All the best for your move, Albert. This week's episode, we're looking at Razer. Another one of your suggestions, Albert, which as I've dived into it, I've really, really loved. What made you think of Razer for this week's episode?
Yeah, Razer, good business. I think I wanted to understand, you know, gaming across like the hardware stack. You know, we talk about gaming a lot, but from like a game development perspective or from a mobile gaming perspective, we don't often talk about hardware. And, you know, I'm like a bit allergic to hardware. So it's good to challenge myself to see, is there attractiveness in this business?
So for those that don't know, Razer is one of the world's leading lifestyle brands for gamers. They design and build the world's largest gamer-focused ecosystem of hardware, software, and services. You know, if you take away some of those broad brush terms, what we're really talking about is, you know, one of the leading manufacturers for keyboards, gaming mouses, laptops, etc. And then some of the software and services that wrap around that. From the software side of things, you know, we're all familiar with the stereotypical picture of a gamer setup with all of the lights and everything sort of set up around the peripheries. They've got a sort of a proprietary software which helps gamers set up their setup. And then the services wrap around that again to help gamers, you know, pay for games, access games, and then merchants associated with games to get transactions with their customers as well. So they're really across the whole stack, which is something that we tend to love. Isn't that right, Albert?
Yeah, I think that they've got this really great kind of intersection of where they play across, you know, games, the peripherals around games, and then the software that supports gaming. So they think of it kind of like hardware, ownership, and viewing. So it's like owning a game, playing a game, watching a game, and they play across that, which we both really like.
So let's get started with the breakdown, Albert. You just mentioned peripherals, and just to make sure we're all on the same page, when we say peripherals, we are talking essentially about the gaming accessories. So those are your keyboards, mouses, etc., that sort of hardware. What is it about their peripherals, their hardware business, Albert, that excites you or maybe doesn't excite you?
Yeah, it's definitely more broader than peripheral. So they play across a number of different segments. I don't know whether we want to talk about like it as from a consumer lens or a hardware lens and software, but I guess let's just go from hardware, software, and then services more broadly. Yep. On the hardware side, you know, they play across each different type of like gaming device, so PCs, consoles, and mobile gaming. And then they do hardware across that. So on their PC business, they build high-end laptops, like high-end performance gaming laptops. So they're not really your run-of-the-mill like MacBooks or you know, Microsoft Surfaces that people, you know, generally buy for office work and recreational work. These are like high-performance machines that are built for gaming. They've also got desktops and then different components for that, accessories, and then rightfully peripherals. So things like your keyboard, your mouse mats, headsets, speakers for your computer, things like that. So that's their PC side.
Yeah, and this is the moneymaker for the business. So in the last financial year, they sort of raked in about $1.5 billion, which is a great segment size for a business. This is about 85 to 90% of their total revenue, I think, if that's right, Albert. So really, when we're talking about Razer, you know, we are talking about hardware first, and then software and services are sort of the secondary priorities for this business. One of the things which really drives manufactured business, hardware businesses, in my opinion, is, well, what's the underlying technology? You know, I think what we'll get into a little bit later is the branding behind it as well. But at its core, to have a cult following, to have consumers who love and will be sticking with your product, it actually has to be a good product in the first place. And they've really got a lot of tech underpinning all of the peripherals, all of the hardware that they're manufacturing, all of their mice, for instance, their mouses. They're using hyperpolling wireless technology, which is a nice fancy way to say, like, there's basically zero latency. So when you move your mouse physically on the screen, the mouse is moving at exactly the same time. They've got really high quality optical sensors, again, for that tactility when you're moving the mouse. Thinking about the other peripherals which they're working with, specific microphones for their gaming setups, audio drivers, etc., keyboards. They're manufacturing their own switches and keys so that you can get that sort of optimal performance for gamers. You know, that's sort of their tagline. They're built for gamers by gamers. So they've got that branding associated with their hardware too.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth deep diving into their hardware a bit just to really paint a picture of what this business does. And so, like, they build, you know, these gaming devices, whether it's a laptop or a desktop. It's really targeted at a high-end gamer. They also then build, you know, different components for people who are building their own PCs. So if you're really enthusiastic about gaming, you are often building your own gaming PC. Like, my younger brother's got his own gaming PC, that kind of his chosen bespoke parts so that, you know, it's what he wants. But the third part of what they do, which I think is really interesting, is that they've got what they call, like, the Razer Core, which is an attachment that you can add onto your laptop that turns your laptop into a gaming computer. And so, you know, if anyone using, like, a laptop right now, if you've got one at home, you know, a normal MacBook or a MacBook Pro or whatever, it's still not a high-end gaming device. Despite it being really, really great, it just can't process games at the same rate as, like, a dedicated gaming computer due to the presence of a graphics card and things like that in those devices. What Razer have done is they understand that most people who are into gaming don't often have a dedicated gaming computer but want to play, you know, high-end games. They've built a device that connects onto a laptop that enables them to run high-performance games without owning a laptop. So you don't need a high-performance gaming laptop anymore. If you've got a Mac, you can just buy one of their Razer Core and transform your computer whenever you want into a high-performance gaming device.
Yeah, and this is a sort of a segment which it's interesting because obviously we've got our Asia focus, Albert. If you think about how gamers consume their hardware across various regions, it's very, very different. So spending per player of, you know, the top eight games that are sort of in the market at the moment, North America, on average, your players are spending about $180 a year. Which is, you know, if you think about, they're buying a mechanical keyboard, they're buying a premium mouse, that sort of gets you that $180 mark. In comparison, Eastern Asia, which is, you know, like your China, Japan, Korea, etc., $81. So there's much, much more players in those regions. So it's still a fantastic market to be selling products into, but you're getting less basket size in that jurisdiction. And then, you know, you go, and we're going to talk about Southeast Asia, I'm sure, Albert, but you go into that region, again, more players than North America, but you're dealing at like a $17 average spend, which basically just says to me, like, they're not really buying the peripherals. They're certainly not buying, like, these high-end gaming laptops, etc. So it's interesting to think of it that lens, where depending on the market, you're going to have access to a lot of players, but potentially at different basket sizes because they're just not going to be purchasing some of the items as much as in other jurisdictions.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are really interesting to me because, like, they're far below what it costs to run a console. I don't know whether that's like PC gaming and a lot of PC games generally are free, like League of Legends, etc., Fortnite, and then you've got to pay for skins, etc. But to me, those numbers seem very low. But, you know, on face value, yeah, it makes sense that in Asia, you know, there's going to be a lower total aggregate amount per player, but a higher volume of players. That's just because they've got to adjust for, you know, different markets, discretionary income, etc.
So I really want to get to the sort of brand loyalty, the brand reputation that Razer has, because it's really a key part of what makes them a business. Why is it that they've got some of this sort of cult following? I was reading about a story where someone essentially tattooed their logo onto their leg, and the founder of Razer sort of sent them a free Razer smartphone or something like that in return. So that, you know, that's very non-corporate if you think about it that way. Like, there's no way Apple is sending out free phones to people who tattoo the Apple logo on themselves. But Razer does have this cult following, particularly among a younger generation.
Yeah, I think what Razer's done really well is that they've just built this incredible brand. And because they started in like 2005, when, you know, gaming wasn't as big of a thing as it is now, they managed to capture a lot of the young, serious gamers who then became professional gamers. But, you know, that aside, you know, their branding, if anyone's had a look at it, it's like this like three-headed snake that's a neon green and black. Like, it looks cool. And if you think back to 2005 and you look at kind of the PC landscape, you had Sony, bland, super bland branding. You know, Nintendo, like, also cool but bland branding. You had Intel. You know, Apple had some nice branding. You had Microsoft, it was pretty boring branding. Like, no one really stood the test of time when it came to branding specifically for gamers and this particular segment of the market. And you can see how cool and how it resonates with gamers. And they just build a brand around, you know, everything that's catered to a gamer around, you know, this particular mystique, for lack of a better word, which comes in the form of like a three-headed snake.
Yeah, and it comes out in the stats. So, you know, I can see sort of a competitor set on my screen at the moment. If you're looking at people who own one key peripheral, and this is a sample taken from sort of core gamers, so people who game a lot, you know, 90% of them will own one key peripheral across all the brands, like SteelSeries, Razer, Corsair, Logitech, HyperX. They all tend to own one item out of all of those various brands. But when it comes to sort of a second or a third key peripheral, that's where Razer is ahead of its peers, where, you know, 46%, if you own one Razer key peripheral already, let's say a keyboard, you're much more likely to have a second one as well, say a mouse rest or something like that. And my theory for this, Albert, and this might transition us slowly towards the software side of their business, is the way they've really presented themselves as providing the lifestyle setup for gamers. Because when I'm looking at my desk at the moment, Albert, I've got a MacBook Pro, Apple, I've got a Samsung screen, you know, Samsung, I've got a sort of custom keyboard from another brand, a Logitech mouse, a mat from Amazon, and a Staples, you know, Officeworks armrest. Just a complete mess, a hodgepodge of various brands. What makes Razer so nice is, like, when you look on Instagram, when you look on YouTube, when you look at your favorite streamer playing a game, they've got a Razer setup where it all just fits perfectly together. It's got RGB lighting across each of the peripherals. You can sync it up with their software server so they can all change colors at the same time, have a unifying theme. That, to me, is where, like, they really stand ahead of their peers in having that, like, connectivity across their devices.
Yeah, it's almost analogous to, like, when you see, like, LeBron or Federer or another athlete you like really sponsored by Nike. And it's the same kind of mysticism and branding, in that this is just a different kind of, like, role model. And so if you're looking at a streamer that you watch, or, you know, someone else on TikTok or Instagram, or you're looking at some of these professional esports players, and they've got their, you know, kit, for lack of a better word, decked out by a Razer. If you're looking at that as a gamer, you're going to want to go then buy Razer stuff. because the gaming market is very saturated. Like, it's incredibly saturated, sorry. And there are other people who produce keyboards, lights, mats, etc. You know, you're also competing with those like traditional furniture players and accessory players that you mentioned, Dan. But because this branding resonates with gamers, and because the branding is done so that it looks cool and it's purpose-built for gaming, it fits in with the culture of what gaming is. You know, I can talk at length at you know, the power of brand, but a lot of people don't realize this when it comes to companies. It's like, brand is a moat. And when you have a really, really strong brand, it gives you the license to go do other things once you've built your customer base. And Razer's a really great example of that.
100%. You know, like when I think of some of the gaming live streams, which, you know, I watch a few, all of the streamers have a particular type of chair, you know, what is known as a gaming chair. And that is like quintessentially Razer. You know, there's another sort of brand which is really successful that does it as well. But there's a particular look to it. There's a very prominent branding. As soon as you log on to a stream, which is, you know, for those that don't know, a sort of live video stream of a person playing games, doing other things, what's really prominent is obviously A, the streamer, the person doing the live stream, and then what they're sitting on. And usually they'll have, you know, a Razer branding on it. And then again, through those sort of streams, they're going to promote the kit that they're using. Almost all of them will have a description section where they say, you know, this is my setup. And it's, you know, Razer, 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 all of these items which people want to emulate. Is there anything else about the software business, Albert, you want to get into now that we're sort of here?
Yeah, I think before we touch on that, I think it's really, really worth just drilling down. Like, this is just not a gaming company anymore. Like, they're branching out and just leveraging their brand. So they've got a collaboration coming out with Bape. If anyone knows Bape, they're the brand, that the streetwear brand started by Nego, but they've got a collab called A Gaming Ape that's coming out. They've also done a collaboration with Panerai, like the luxury watch house.
Wow.
They've done a collaboration with Tumi. I don't know if there's ex-consultants, ex-bankers.
Tumi Bags, yeah.
Tumi Bags, very expensive travel bags, like ESL Gaming. They've got a sneaker collaboration coming out with like a sustainable shoe brand called Kariuma. You know, for probably the more recreational market, they've got a brand called Fossil. Oh, they're collaborating with Fossil, with Hello Kitty, with Genshin Impact, with Halo. Like, the list goes on and on and on in terms of where Razer have started to dip, you know, their hand in branding. And I think it really, really shows how Razer's become more than just like a gaming brand. It's becoming like a cultural icon because of the rise in gaming, and they're leveraging their brand to do other things.
This is a really interesting point, Albert. So let's hold off the software discussion for a moment. I was watching a video of Mr. Beast, who I'm sure, you know, a lot of listeners know, but he's essentially sort of the number one YouTuber at the moment, soon going to be bigger than PewDiePie, over 100 million subscribers. And he was sort of talking tangentially about this point where he's actually got a whole bunch of side businesses. Like, people might not know this if you're not living in America, but like, he's got Mr. Beast Eats, where it's essentially like he has a bunch of restaurants, like they're ghost kitchens, but he's essentially sort of got like a McDonald's type sort of startup. You've got Logan Paul, KSI, big YouTubers who now have Prime Drinks, which is like a Gatorade. And what he was talking about was just businesses don't quite understand that as soon as you have a core following and a brand, you can do anything. Like, you can take on any of these businesses. You can be a fast food chain. You could be a drinks company. You could be a gaming company. It all just starts with the brand. And that's, going back to Razer, something I really love is they have the brand. They have the following. Without that, it's just a commodity. They're just any other mechanical keyboard. They're just any other mouse. The real differentiator is the brand.
I'm so glad you said that, because, you know, I love what Mr. Beast is doing. Like, I don't watch a lot of YouTube, but I look at how he's built this like community and brand. And like I said, that gives him a license to do other things. Like, I think his burger business is like one of the most successful burger businesses now.
Yep.
In the US. He's got Mr. Beast Eats. I don't know if you know, it's like his like chocolate lolly brand. Like, when you can nail branding and nail your audience and community and like get them to rally around you just like Razer has around the gaming community, you know, you can do unbelievable things. And that's let them do collaborations with Panerai. It's let them do collaborations, you know, with Bape and things like that. Like, those brands are so conscious about their own brand, let alone like collaborating with other people. They're only going to do it for the right reasons. I think this is a good segue into like how they've started to play in software and services, because they've got a license to do that.
Yeah, well, and that license comes from their user base, and their software platform has over 175 million users. So if you, and that's really tied to their hardware. You're not using their software platform unless you've got a Razer device, a hardware device. So it really goes to show the extent in which they've penetrated the market, that, you know, there's potentially 175 million people with a Razer device in their homes. Extreme penetration. What they've sort of done to bring it together is, as I mentioned before, the ability to really unify your setup with the Razer Chroma RGB, which is a proprietary lighting technology. They use Razer Synapse, which is an Internet of Things platform, to basically like, I can pull up on my desktop a little sort of app, which lets me change the color across, you know, a spectrum of colors. It can be up to 1 million different colors, depending on the shade, lighting, etc. I can have particular sort of links where if I'm, what do they call it, Albert, where it's, you've got a particular key which does a function. If you do a certain gesture, that could be another function. You know, it helps you set up all these different things. So a really, really cool intuitive platform that just, you know, lets you customize your setup essentially.
Yeah, and I think if anyone is wondering, if you're not a gamer, like, why would I want to customize my setup and keys and things like that? Like, again, like, if you imagine your gaming setup as like your gym or like your fitness area, in like your training area, in the same way that athletes, you know, think about their gym and what's you know, position in their gym, how things are set up, lighting, etc. It's like all the same. Like, people care about gaming and they want their game experience to be tailored and specific to them. And part of that is just having like cool lights. And like, these are things that gamers care about, and they do look cool. I think the other thing I'll add to that, Dan, is, you know, for their software business as well, they've got some pretty interesting things. Like, they've got their Razer Cortex platform, which is like a platform aggregator that connects to like Steam, Google Games, etc., all your other gaming devices and subscriptions, so that you can see all your games in one place. And then what that Razer then gets to see is, it gets to see, you know, where you're playing games, what platform you prefer, where you prefer to buy games, what you own, whether you own a PC or an Xbox, you know, all these other devices. Like, we've talked about the power of aggregating, and what Razer's doing is aggregating games all on one platform, in the same way that like Roku aggregates, you know, streaming services in one go. They've done exactly the analogous thing for gaming. And they've also got a few other interesting kind of gaming software that they, at the moment, charge nothing for. They're free, but you do need Razer devices. So the Razer Game Booster, which is like an FPS optimizer. And then they've got the Booster Prime, which is like an AI-driven gaming optimizer. So it like learns about how you like to play games, and then adjusts like frame rate, you know, speed, all those things. And then they've got a systems booster that like cleans up your PC for you, and then optimizes your RAM and what's like being used by your PC, so that your gaming isn't lagging. So it's a pretty interesting software stack as well.
Yeah, it is really, really interesting. But if we're done with software, Albert, I really want to get into their services business, because to me this was like, this is something I hadn't heard about before, hadn't seen before, and I really want to dive into it. Because, you know, even a couple of years ago, when it was just their hardware and software business, they were still doing really, really well, but they weren't profitable. What seemed to really flip that switch for them was getting this high gross margin business segment through its services business. And that comprises its Razer Gold and Razer FinTech products. Razer Gold is this sort of unified gaming payment system, which I sort of think of a bit like PayPal for games almost. They've got like 34,000 titles, which you can basically purchase games similar to Steam or Epic Games, which you can make in-app purchases. and you're using their particular currency, Razer Silver, which I think is such an ingenious idea. Like, instead of giving my credit card details out to 10 different games to make in-app purchases, to purchase the title, whatever, I can just use Razer Silver to pay for all these in-app things. And just like a credit card, you're earning points and rewards and other things, which really incentivizes you to stay with Razer Gold and use that that system. To me, like, that's just such a cool idea. Like, it makes so much sense. People playing way more games now, and this really facilitates a problem there, which was having to pay for all those different games every single time separately.
For sure. Imagine, I don't think, again, I don't know what our demographic is, who are gamers who listen to this, but imagine every time you went to a store, you had to load up your credit card with a different currency just to shop at that specific store, right? Like, that is really, really annoying. But that's actually how gaming works, because you've got to buy like in-game credits and you're exchanging real money for that. So each time you play a game and you want to buy things in the game, you effectively have to have a new currency for all those games. Like, the average gamer owns, what, like 6 games? If you're making in-app purchases, that's 6 different currencies you're managing. Like, that's a lot. If you're not using all of them, that's underutilized cash. Like, you don't know how much you're spending. You can't run, like, you can't all transfer it at once. So if you've got $100 to spend, you know, a week, a month on gaming, you've got to divvy that up. It's really hard to keep track. What they've done here, which is why it's so genius, with Razer Gold and with Razer Silver, is that they've enabled a centralized gaming currency that all games can now take, and they generate revenue by taking a percentage clip of every transaction. So for every dollar that goes through the Razer Gold, Razer Silver, they take a small percentage of that. And so as gamers increase, you know, in market size and penetration, the amount they spend, Razer's only going to grow with that at basically marginal cost. Like, it's a great business.
And going back to our Grab episode, Albert, from a couple of weeks ago, you know, the idea which I really took from that episode, which I really want to carry forward when I'm looking at companies, is the idea of like, well, what's the problem that they're trying to solve? Like, what led them to create this business segment? And if that really aligns with their core mission, that's great for me. Like, that's really synergistic. And that's what I see here with Razer. The core problem they were trying to fix was so many of their Asia users, going back to Southeast Asia in particular, don't have bank accounts. So like it's a problem for us in Australia when we're like, we have to give credit card details across all these different platforms. There's that friction. There's literally an impossibility in some countries where it's like, they just don't even have a credit card to use. They don't have a bank account card they can use. They really need to go somewhere offline, pay in cash, like the equivalent of going to a grocery store, buying a $50 gift voucher, loading up your game screen, inputting the code for your voucher, and now you've got in-game credit. They've facilitated that with Razer Gold. They've got, you know, over a million different sort of places in Asia that you can go to, use cash, bank transfer, whatever, to purchase credit in Razer Gold that you can then use across all of these gaming platforms. So like, it's solving a problem, getting more money into the ecosystem, which they can then profit off. It's a really clever idea.
Yeah, I think we've been very positive of Razer, and you know, there's probably a few challenges with the business that we can start to talk about. But you know, Dan, I think do you feel like we're done dapping it up? We've outlined like it's pretty good performance, been very, you know, singing hymns about its branding. Should we take the reverse view and start talk about the key challenges and risks with Razer?
Yeah, I think we should. I mean, I feel like we've got a bias, Albert, which is whenever we pick a company, it's probably because we kind of like it in some way. That's what's drawn us to them. Maybe we should do a whole separate episode just on like a company we absolutely hate and flame it the whole time.
Yeah, I think I've suggested that before, and there's definitely been companies, particularly in the early days of the pod, where we just like sledged them the entire time.
Yeah.
Now I think we just keep the sledging to like 5 minutes.
Let's get into it, Albert. What would be your key concern about Razer?
Look, I think the key is like Razer have built an incredible brand and that served them really well. But I don't know whether that brand is going to be sustainable, because right now you've got, you know, different teams who are starting to do what Razer's doing. So like of the top kind of top gaming teams, they've all, a bunch of them have started to build their own kind of merchandise, their own peripherals, their own software, etc., because they've got their own brand and following. In the same way that Mr. Beast has started to monetize his brand and following, like, you know, companies like our gaming teams like Cloud9 have also started to do that, and they've got sponsorships so they can leverage the expertise of their partners to help them. So I guess my concern is, if you're a gamer, why would you go with Razer versus, you know, the merchandise and the peripherals and, you know, everything else that comes with gaming of the teams that you really like?
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. When we think of what's popular, particularly on what is a very sort of internet brand, like you think of gaming, it's very much run over the internet. The culture is really embedded in internet culture, and that can flip really, really quickly. You could imagine across some of the gaming platforms, the pro leagues, just some of the best players of those leagues, if they decided to band together, create their own keyboard, mouse, whatever setup, that would be, you know, really, really popular. That would really eat into market share. It's just that sort of flip away from happening. I know we're trying to be critical now, but the reason I don't necessarily believe in that is, like, I think that would work with the edges of the gaming community, you know, the more casual. I do think there's something which isn't quite a commodity in this business, which, as we started off sort of talking about the hardware, there's some sophisticated hardware in this stuff. So much so that I don't think a business who's not really into the tech can provide a better quality product. And that's where Razer will sort of keep its advantage. Like, some of these popular streamers, they can come up with their own branded device, but at the end of the day, will they have the R&D capacity to really outperform a Razer product? I don't think so. So I agree it's probably a problem, but I don't know if it's like the whole company at risk kind of problem. It's more at the peripheries of their market, I think.
Yeah, I guess the other concern I have is not even them, but it's probably them partnering with other brands. Like, there's a gaming team called 100 Thieves, and they've got partners with Cash App. They've got partners with JBL, the speaker company. They've got partners with a bunch of food businesses, Iced Tea, Grubhub, etc. So I'm not going to draw stereotypes here, but, you know, they've got two direct partners with competitors, Cash App, which competes with their currency services business, and they've got JBL, which competes with their speaker business. And so I guess what I worry is, when you've got a lot more players who've got products applicable to gaming, or who've started to see gaming as a market they want to play in, they can throw money at branding in that market. Will Razer be able to compete as this market gets kind of more fragmented and more competitive?
Oh, this is such a good point, Albert, because it just twigged something which I've been watching. You know, I think a way to differentiate this is, you know, are you the brand of the players, or are you a brand of the sport? You know, a really good example would be, if you think of basketball, the players, they're all wearing Nike, etc. They got those brand deals. But the ball is like, it's Spalding, or the ball is, you know, another particular brand. In the same way, like, I have seen when I've watched some of the professional esports, you know, Razer does sponsor like the actual computers that they play on stage, and Bose does the speakers that they use on stage. To that extent, to which, like, maybe their players, yes, they've got particular deals with influencers, with streamers, but they just want to be part of like the core infrastructure of the professional leagues, and maybe that's how they sort of position themselves, and that's a bit more of a moat, I guess, that you could have.
Yeah, you just have to wonder, like, is that eternal? Like, Nike is obviously, like, it entrenched itself in athletics, and they're just leading that. And, you know, it's very difficult to see a world where Nike isn't, like, a top one, top two, like, athletic wear brand. You know, I don't know whether that's necessarily true for Razer, because this space moves so much faster. Gaming moves so much faster than other industries. And branding and gaming is also changing as well. And so my concern is, like, can they keep up with that and keep their brand as the market starts to shift?
Now, I love that criticism, because I've sort of got a similar one, but on the hardware side, which, you know, I flagged with you before we started recording. My concern would be, you know, so many of their peripherals, mouse, keyboard, laptops, you know, it's really built around the PC gaming setup. And as we've talked about on the pod, there's definitely a shift and a trend towards mobile-first gaming. And a big question a lot of analysts, a lot of people have, is when you look at a really young location geography like Southeast Asia and the particular, I guess, average salary consumer spend in those regions, are they just going to skip the computer sort of phase? Are they just going to go straight from, you know, they don't have the hardware and they just go straight to mobile first? And that you can already see that in the sort of gaming market breakdown. You know, 43% of people are playing smartphone games. Then you've sort of got consoles at 30%, and then browser PC or downloaded PC games at that about 20% mark. Still a really significant slice of the pie, of an ever-growing pie. But you wonder, you know, can Razer shift its business to take advantage of the amount of mobile gamers we're going to have? What kind of extra accessories and things can they add on to that stack to keep up with that trend?
Yeah, well, we had this conversation offline where I probably believe the inverse, in that they can start to shift and explore new products that we haven't even thought about yet. And that's what you'd want from a management team, right? Like you, and it's not the same thing because Bezos is unbelievable, but you can't look at Amazon back in like early 2000s and see them going into AWS. And I'm not going to say that Razer is going to do exactly that, but if you hope that the management team is plugged in into the customer, so that's gamers, and they understand the market really well, that they can explore new products, and they've got, you know, this like eyewear that's got built-in like speakers. So you can wear these like special glasses as you play mobile gaming. It's better for your eyes. And then you get kind of the speakers all in one, so you don't have to wear headphones. They've got like the gaming pad that you can attach your phone to. Like we were just spitballing offline. Maybe there's like multiple screens you can plug into. Maybe there's like portable speakers. I don't know. Maybe there's like holograms or something. But I think the hope is that if they stay close to the gaming industry, which they have because they do, for gamers, by gamers, you'd hope that they can start to explore new products.
Yeah, I think that's right. What I found hardest about that answer was like it does depend a little bit on this. They're going to create a product which I can't even think of yet, which I'm pretty skeptical of. I'm like, I think I could think of what accessory could be plugged into my phone to make the gaming experience better. And I just couldn't really think of one. But you're absolutely right. You know, they've got teams of people working on this. And so far, they've shown a really good knack for innovation, R&D, and getting products out that really fit their segment. Like that branding of for gamers by gamers really encapsulates Razer as a brand and as a business.
Yeah, this is a good segue to like the last risk on my kind of plate was they've got a whole range of products. Like if you go to Wikipedia, you can see there's a Wikipedia article called List of Razer Products. There's a lot. I guess my concern with Razer is that they've got too many products and they've got a track record of launching things and they've been unsuccessful with those things. A really great example is the Razer phone. Like they tried to build a bespoke gaming phone and you know that was in market for maybe like a couple of years, but it didn't go particularly well. I think they just misread what smartphones could look like and whether people would want a bespoke gaming smartphone. Yeah. Like people want a bespoke gaming computer. I think that was a key concern. But, you know, they've got a track record of launching products and then either them not going anywhere for a number of years and then getting shut down, or they're just like launching products and diverting focus from teams. And the concern is when you've got such a big portfolio, how you manage that. When I say big portfolio, they play in a lot of different products, which makes it hard to get focused.
This is really interesting, Albert. I want to kind of turn this one back on you because I'm a bit on the fence. Would you rather be a business, let's say like DJI, which we covered a little bit earlier, a couple of months ago, Apple, who let's, you know, just sort of put it all in one basket and say like really high hit rate with their products, like very clearly whatever sort of hits the cutting room floor in-house doesn't circulate outside. Like if they've got a product which they're developing that they don't think works, they don't let it see the light of day. Like what they send to market is premium, very high quality, very successful. Or, you know, if you think about the entrepreneur who's constantly iterating, is it fine that they're letting some of these products hit the market, test it? Okay, that wasn't as successful as we thought. You know, that's just now more data to feed into our internal thinking and processes.
Yeah, I mean, there's no set answer for that, but the key challenge with doing hardware, which is what they do, is you've got to manufacture and then you've got to manufacture at scale. I think that's a problem with trying to experiment with different types of hardware, is that you just got to go through that entire process of like research, development, understanding manufacturing and logistics, and then sending it out to market to test. And I'm not saying Apple hasn't got it perfect because they had bending phones and things like that. But when you've got, you know, 50 plus, 100 plus products and you're doing things like PCs, and they're also doing things like masks, you know, mouse mats, game pads, mobile phones, etc. It just becomes a harder game.
Love the pun, Albert. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good one. I think it's probably about time we finish up, Albert. Verdict. What have you got?
Look, I really like them as a business. I think we shouldn't underestimate the power of brand, which they have. And as long as they can maintain that, like, they're probably going to continue to do really well.
Yeah. A lot of, you know, I didn't bring out these stats during the pod, but a lot of analysts basically talking about what's going to happen to the gaming market over the next 5-10 years. It is expanding pretty rapidly. All of the various segments, mobile, console, PC, they're all expanding as well. Like, this is one of those cases where there's a growing pie and then there's a growing pie within the pie. So I think they're just, you know, right at a really nice niche for themselves as well. When I looked at their competitor set, you know, like, I knew the other brands, Logitech obviously being one of the major ones, SteelSeries, HyperX. They're not, you know, like, huge, huge competitors though. Like, I see this as a little bit like, to use one of our last episodes, Albert, like Sony and Canon. I think it's a bit of a two-horse race with them and Logitech in the peripherals, and then all the rest are like a very clear tier or two below them, which is a great place to be as a market leader. So I'm really keen on them. I'm glad you brought this one to my attention, Albert.
Yeah, there's the saying, it's like in a gold rush, like, you want to own the picks and shovels. Yep. And gaming is the gold rush at the moment, and mobile gaming is going to be the next gold rush. And, you know, Razer, they own the picks and shovels, and they light up. So, cool, cool picks and shovels.
All right, Albert, let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to the Fresh Capital Podcast, a podcast about companies and investing told in a refreshingly simple way. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you in next week's episode. See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya!